When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hey, listen.
Kicking your door down with our handguns of entertainment and shooting you right in the face.
Not the face.
We are, yeah, right in the face. Aww. We are one-upsmanship. That's right. You like that violent intro, Mike? One of our hosts, Michael Swain?
I'm dead. And our other host, right. Still living, still drawing air.
That barely, but seems about to pull to a gun me, on you.
But Adam Ganser.
That's right. That's right. That's how I see this game. And I'm sure you do too. Lots of kicking indoors.
Oh yeah.
Because today we're covering one of the classics of the massive Call of Duty franchise. Did you hear, by the way, the most recent installment, which came out this week when we're recording it, has sold $800 million worth in 3 days?
Wow.
It's insane, man.
And the doors get it even worse in that installment, I heard. You kick so many doors.
There's so many. Yeah, doors are really
the new multiplayer
for
thing
freedom.
Instead of zombies now, it's just competitive door kicking and... Breach, breach, breach. We got a breach. No, it's just another door, Captain. Then breach, man. Breach. You just breach
that
an endless series of doors.
An amazing, like, Stanley's Parable level or something.
Of Call of Duty. Yeah, you throw a flashbang, move ahead. There's another door. You breach it, throw a flashbang, you move ahead.
Yep. There's doors under the bed with guns.
These terrorists are truly mad.
Just, yeah, doors looking at you askance, and you're not sure if they're going to pull guns on you.
Call of Doors
is a game we just invented that should exist, but we're not going to talk about that today, because today we're talking about Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, the 2007 classic, not the reboot from 2019.
No.
A fact that you may not be surprised to hear we got wrong the last time we tried to make this episode.
Yes, we convened to record an episode. Adam
that's
had
right.
played this, 2007.
Right.
Think There Will Be Blood. Think No Country for Old Men. Think Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
And I played the reboot from many years later, 2019
that's
or
right.
some shit. And we convened and he's like, what'd you think of this game? And I said some shit where he's like, but they're not in this game or whatever character.
What are you saying?
So now we've both played the right installment of Call of
that's
Duty
right.
Modern Warfare. And we're
we
ready
sure
to
have.
Discuss it.
So shall we pass our first ever checkpoint and tell them, shall we breach the first door and tell them like their 8-bit about Call of Duty 4?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? You want to do it? You want me to do it?
I feel like the way the order of the day has been going, I should do it, right? That's what my gut
says. Okay, great. I agree.
Okay. I feel like you could probably do a more, well, you're more of a COD boy. Of
Much
the two
more.
Of us, but also Call of Duty is not the most complicated thing to break down, so I'm sure I'll be fine.
Agreed.
Okay, so Call of Duty historically began as a franchise that was literally trying to recreate notable battles from World War II with a very much like putting you there in the action. You're the kind of dad who stays up late watching black and white World War II footage on the History Channel. Now you can live it, right? Now you can fucking be in there. And it's sort of the themes were like the title, the call of duty, the brotherhood of soldiers on the battlefield, fighting the great fights for the blah, blah, blah. And slowly but surely it's become, and this is not objective, so I'll avoid getting into like, you can argue whether it's leaned towards away from that. At certain times it's gone to space, so obviously that's not historical. But the franchise has been multiple things, but it's always been one thing, which is a market leader in the first-person shooter genre, which is a genre I would define as, it's kind of in the name, but in case you're unfamiliar with the most dominant video game genre, you don't see your character, you're in your character's head, the screen is your eyes, essentially, and at the center of the screen is something representing the aim of your gun, and you click or pull a trigger if you're using a controller, and the gun fires, and you wiggle your sticks around or whatever you're using to try and aim at what you want to kill. You kill stuff, and then you can complexify that, right? Like, that's the most basic first-person shooter engagement, beginning with things like Doom and Marathon and Wolfenstein. But when it comes to, like, three-dimensional, fully realized, grounded in reality, except the space one, war games that are simulating wars that actual humans might fight on Earth, fought by professional soldiers who, you know, enlisted in high school or whatever, like real world war simulation from first person, Call of Duty's the one-stop shop. I mean, there's Battlefield as well. There are competitors, but it's the Coke, right? It's the Coke of that. So let's get to four, Modern Warfare. I have a lot to say in the rant, not much to say in the tell me like I made bit, because I think you're probably already on board. It's a first-person shooter by the virtue of the fact that it's called Modern Warfare. You could probably guess it's not set in World War II. I don't even remember if 3 was. Do you know when 3 was set?
I believe 3 was also. This is the first time they went into modern times.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay, so the big notable thing about this installment in the series is that they were trying to present the idea of, okay, we've done what it's like to be a guy storming the beaches of Normandy 3 times. Now we're doing today, ripped from the headlines. This was the one that's like, this is what it's like to be SEAL Team 6 and go on operations to kill Osama bin Laden. It predates that, so it wasn't literally that, but you know what I mean. This is what it's like to be a soldier in 2007. They were trying to do modern warfare, but it's still an FPS where you navigate a series of soldiers. You play as a variety of soldiers, and in the missions where you inhabit them, they fight their way through battle zones to achieve goals, ultimately leading to you stopping a Russian extremist from nuking the world. He launches a bunch of nukes, and you're able to rush to the nuclear center and fight your way in, and just in the nick of time, send the abort codes and save the world from getting nuked. And that's the story. That's Call of Duty Modern
Nuking
Warfare.
It twice. We're saving him from nuking it twice.
Oh, because he did. Nuke does go off, but he's going to nuke the whole Eastern Seaboard, and you're able to stop that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah. Stop the important nuke, the one that hits
by
America.
By pointing your camera around and shooting guys. It's a first-person shooter. Yeah. I think that's all you need to know. Yeah.
Shoot your way to salvation. Thank you. I thought that was well described, sir. I really appreciated it. I'm going to move us through our next checkpoint, which means yet another breach.
Move.
Yet another breach, this time on a boat breach, a thing that you do several times in this game. Into the rants, I guess it's my turn to go first.
That's
is that
how
right?
That works. Yep.
Okay, then I guess I'll do that. Player one, Adam Ganser, plugging in. Okay, so I think that there's an important question you have to ask about Call of Duty, and that is, why is this one worth talking about preserving on the Celestial hard drive as opposed to any of the others? Since this game is not exactly, but similar to like a Madden Football or any sports franchise, that's sort of a yearly iteration, why does this one deserve to be preserved if any of them do? My argument is this is the best Call of Duty has ever been, and it stands out from the rest in several ways. The first is that this is our first venture into contemporary warfare, which completely changed the franchise. Have we gone back to World War II since? Yes, but not often, and never as successfully. Like, this was a permanent move. Much of what has become a staple of Call of Duty, including its dominance, starts here. And there are things that are now basically just synonymous with those, with this franchise, that were invented for this game. Among them include the AC-130 mission. That's a mission you're going to get anytime you go in any modern landscape. There's going to be that mission. The all ghillied up mission, right? So hiding in plain sight with ghillie suits. That's a thing that's Call of Duty staple, started here. The trope of your character dying, like you playing multiple characters and one of them dies, that started here. And it was a surprise the first time. The nuclear explosion, which was a shocking thing that happens in this game, that has now become, I think, sort of rote because they've continued to do versions of it and other franchises have copied it. But in this game, it was unthinkable and it happened and it was great. And also it invented, I think, the most memorable characters that Call of Duty has yet created in Captain Price and his squad of compatriots, including Ghost and Gaz and all these others.
Soap,
right?
And Gaz.
Yeah. Soap and Gaz. All those people were invented for this game. And they've been reprised in the reboots since, to varying degrees of success. So all that stuff was new to this game, and I think that matters. The storytelling in this game is actually top-notch for Call of Duty. There's tons and tons of twists and escalations. So even though it's not yet the bombastic version of storytelling that it will become in subsequent entries in the Modern Warfare franchise, this one has some great twists and surprises. For instance, the murder of Al-Assad was surprising. The fact that the nuclear bomb went off, the fact that there are more missiles launching. There's just a lot of great twists here. They're like, oh, shit. And the stakes go up every time, which is what a successful action story should do. It's not written for maximum adrenaline the way that Call of Duty often is now. It's really written more for following the trail of this terrorist organization. So it's kind of more intimate. And I think that part of it is good. And there's more of a human element in it. For instance, people are constantly making mistakes. There's miscommunication. Orders don't always come through. Stuff that feels more true to life than it has later become, where it's all sort of, you know, cinematically decided. Certainly Modern Warfare 2, by the way, which by that I'm talking about, I think the 2008 or 9 sequel, got way into movie territory. And the franchise basically stayed there since then. This one didn't do that, and I think that makes it better. It's much more intense than any of the previous Call of Duties. And finally, this is, I think, the beginning of the multiplayer dominance that Call of Duty now enjoys, because they created the killstreak idea, and it started here. Killstreaks have become Call of Duty's multiplayer thing, like their unique thing, and other franchises have, of course, copied it. But the idea of, once you get several kills without dying, you get an additional reward that you can deploy in the battlefield, started here. It's why a lot of people still play it. It's become, of course, a monolith. And that's probably enough for us to start. So that's my rant.
Fabulous rant. You said so much of Thank what you. I want to say that I wish you had done the 8-bit thing and I did the rant first, because now I'm out. Not true. But it'll be a quick rant, because I only have basically one thesis to lob it. I agree with everything Adam said. My gamer gland is very much in alignment on this one, which is interesting because, as I said, when we met to discuss the reboot, we were very much not in alignment. Now, of course, Adam was talking about this game and I was talking about that game. So I don't know. Maybe Adam will agree with me more, but I was coming down fucking hard on the reboot. Mm-hmm. And if we cover it, I'll re-elucidate those things. But I'm glad we aborted and I had time to think it through more and play this game, because it sort of pulled me out of the depths of darkness a little bit in terms of the franchise. But I guess, as my rant, I'll say that the way I played this was unique. I kept alternating between this and Modern Warfare 2, the current, it's the 2022 one that just dropped this week, the brand newest Call of Duty.
Yep.
And alternating between them, I thought this was very good and the new one was very bad. And I say that as a campaign player more than a multiplayer player, so that's got to be noted. But comparing the campaigns and the aspects of craftsmanship of the various components of the game, as we'll dig into as the podcast wears on, it only made me appreciate Modern Warfare, COD4, more. As like, oh, you can fuck up Call of Duty and you can be lazy about Call of Duty. The graphics will always look good because it has all the money and all the people crunching that are necessary to make it look better and better and better. So it always feels so slick that it can kind of obfuscate the design elements. And when you're actually comparing modern Call of Duty with Modern Warfare, which is actually not modern at this point because it was 2007, 15 right. years ago, I think the franchise has fallen so far. And I guess my spiciest take is that I think Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, the one we're discussing, I hate how clear I have to be, but yeah, the one we're talking about today is a phenomenal game that did, for better or worse, cement the franchise in an entirely new direction. And I would say for worse. This is the beginning Call of Duty being completely ruined to the point that and you can listen to my World War II episode on this. If we cover any of the reboots, I'll get into it more specifically. I know this is a bold thing to just throw out, but Adam knows why I've talked it. Like, I find them offensive. And it's rare that I find a game offensive. I think that they diminish the people who have suffered and fought for various causes and died in war. Like, I think they've gotten to a point where they're insulting to me, and kind of grotesque. And I was so delighted to find that this one does not hit me that way. I thought it fucking ripped, and I still do have a capacity to enjoy war shit. Like, I'm not just a guy who goes like, anything with war is bad because there's killing. I fucking love this. I thought this game was great. I didn't think, even though you're murdering people of other nationalities, as if you follow me, I thought it was even handed. Like, I didn't think it was necessarily propaganda that was against or for any particular group other than just people who launch nukes are bad. And I agree with that. So like,
right.
I was risky okay take. With the plot, blah, blah, blah. And we'll get into more of the actual innovations in Game On, but I just thought this set the trend. There are so many innovations that they're still echoing it to this day. And the real thing is that it pivoted it from Call of Duty 1, 2, and 3, which I agree, they ran out of gas. They ran out of legs. They're like, how can we keep the franchise going? And this was a smart way to do that. But I also think it trapped them. So Call of Duty 1, 2, and 3 feel, to some degree, like reading a history book, or geopolitical focus, like Adam said, looking at a map of war on the wall and imagining yourself, oh yeah, this is what World War II was like. And there's some argument to be made that maybe that is cheapening the lives of, because there's that like scholastic distance from it, and that I'd be open to talking about that. But it still felt like you were doing history or somehow trying to, the point was the Call of Duty that all these people felt, and you would
responded
play
to
nameless, right. faceless soldiers, and that was part of it. Call of Duty 4. So, for example, Call of Duty 1, 2, and 3 on the cover, and this continues to this day, their cover is almost always a soldier whose face is not recognizable, a generic soldier coming at camera. And I feel like that's emblematic of what Call of Duty was once. It was that all soldiers are united because they're soldiers, and that's a unique human experience, and that's what the game is about. 4 started the new trend of, you know what would spice this up? Actual characters we care about, like a movie. And forget being at a geopolitical 10,000 feet. Let's zoom in and get to know a likable guy like Price or Soap. Let's have characters we invest in. Okay, that totally makes sense to me. I love characters. I'm a storyteller. But for this franchise, for me, that actually ruins it. Because it turns it from a story about actually the cost of war, that billions of people, or, you know, thousands of people whose faces you'll never like who you want, but they died or they threw their lives into this machine for this cause to keep other people from being tortured or whatever the stake is. It was big enough that they threw their lives away for that. Whereas now we have Captain Price, who as a character that we've invested in and like, has to have plot armor. He's not going to die in the middle of the story. Right. So now it's a traditional action adventure movie with people who are basically superheroes, elevated to the level of, well, they're main characters. If they get taken out, it's a big plot point. That actually cheapens it to me. It's like someone saying, let me tell you about the war. It was so sick. There were a bunch of superheroes there doing kick-ass shit. That's not what I want to hear about war. That's just not my sentiment. What I like to hear about war is, poetry about how everyone dying in the trenches in World War One. I just think that death is a very serious issue and war is real. And like people like, I'm sure people think that I know the majority of people listening to this probably think I'm going way too far with this, but in my opinion, to some degree, the story becomes less visceral and more just like, oh, it's like a Marvel thing, but the milieu is war. And Call of Duty used to actually feel like you were kind of experiencing war and make me meditate on those things. Now it's like navigating any Marvel movie. It just happens to be about guys with guns instead. Okay. And I think this was the beginning of that. And it's a terrible direction for the franchise to go in. But I'll end my rant by saying it works once. Like this time.
It worked this time.
This is the game that's right on the line and right on the cusp.
Okay.
And kind of doing both at once successfully to me. But then after this, the franchise really doubled down on, oh, we don't have to take ourselves seriously anymore. We're just a fun action movie franchise. And I thought the old thing was more interesting than that. End of
okay.
rant.
Honestly, that's a great talking point and one that I am excited to delve into with you, which we'll do after we come back from this break.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, if you're still here, that means you weren't super annoyed by me trying to moralize about this stupid game where you just shoot people for fun. And I hope I didn't ruin your hobby or pastime. But now we're in game on.
Yeah, we're so sorry. We should pass a checkpoint, of course, and get right into game on so that we can have this debate that's worth having, I think.
Which is the part of the podcast where Adam lobs stuff at me. Go.
No. Honestly, I kind of want to say, I think part of the success of some recent Battlefield games is that they returned to that concept, the concept that you want out of your war game.
The faceless, nameless soldier.
Yeah, like
in
Battlefield
trench,
1.
Yeah.
Did you play that? Did you play Battlefield 1, the World War 1 one?
Yeah. Right.
That was a pretty good outing. That was exactly what you're describing.
I ultimately like war stuff. I do like war stuff. But I like war stuff whose message is war is hell, or at least does honor to that idea, because I believe that's the truth. I don't think war would be a fun adventure.
Well, so I have mixed feelings. I think it is. I think there does need to be at least one facet of the way we evaluate Call of Duty needs to be moral. So I want to put that out there right now. I do think that there should be moral judgments levied against Call of Duty at large. One of them is that by creating these modern warfare games, they have created some problematic views of specific areas of the world. And this is not me talking. This is like, social studies, that they sort of reinforce the idea that there are certain countries that are war torn, which does not engender empathy.
No,
it actually makes
us
detached.
Part of the post 9/11 American, let's be really scared of the Middle
That's
East
right.
now forever. They're part of that. That propaganda vibe.
Right. I think in this game there, and at most of the games, I think they're trying to some degree or another to avoid leaning too heavily into that.
You can tell because they always include good ones of like in this, there's the Russians are the big bad. And then at the end, you get saved by Russian allies. So they're like, we're not saying any particular
We're not saying
group
they're all
bad.
Right. Yeah, there's a Nikolai here. Yeah. Well, and if there was ever an easy target for games of this type, it's Russians, right? Like, and not to weigh into that too heavily, but that's the safest group of people to assign as villains in these stories and has been for a bit. So I'm not saying that because I want to like sit here and deconstruct Call of Duty on a moral level that I wouldn't apply to a lot of other games, but because Call of Duty is sort of positioned itself as number one, the most successful video game of the last 20 years, like that franchise, like it's if that is what most people are buying for, if they're playing one video game, right? Like I know that's a little bit of a generalization, but
no, that's true.
Statistically true. So then it does deserve a little bit of the, okay, so what is this game saying about the world? And it is military propaganda, even if the propaganda is the after effect of telling a fun military story, which I think is probably what's happening here.
Like Price still commits war crimes in this. He executes a guy who's been already safely detained against orders, just shoots him in the head and then says a quip. And I'm like, that's pretty fucked up in real life, but okay.
In subsequent outings, and I know we're going to talk about these subsequent outings, so I don't want to go into too much detail.
Right.
They've tried to lean more heavily into everybody's the bad guy, including the Americans, to greater or less success.
That has a ring of truth to it. Everything's gray. Yeah,
that's right. This game is in an interesting place because it's still a little nationalist, although the main characters are not American necessarily. They're like like the United States and her allies.
But you could say pro-Western culture generally. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a lot of questioning about whether they're right. You know, like that is not an aspect of this game that has snuck into the series for, I think, good reasons, you know, because those things need to be questioned. Right. And I do think that if you're going to tell a war story, you are allowed the license to tell the story of war crimes and the story of, like, that's okay. That happens in war. I see the point of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to treat it with the kind of emotional gravitas that stuff deserves. And I think that this game is trying to please a lot of masters. And it's maybe the only one that did it in a way that didn't immediately offend.
You actually think about the challenge that Raven, who are the devs, are from a franchise level accomplishing, they were tasked with take this incredibly successful franchise that we feel is out of gas because we've hit World War II 3 times now. Where do we go next?
More than that, but yeah.
And their idea was, what about modern day? And they're like, okay, that's the gamble. Can you make that work? And they're like, not only are we going to make that work, but we're going to transition this from being a historical exercise series to a cinematic video game experience.
Right.
Which was the right move financially. It just makes Michael Swaim less interested in your games, but I'm not even saying it's a triumph. Like they took a franchise that was already huge and ensured that it could go 25 more years and stay huge. Like they were right. It's all good decisions in terms of the game thriving.
I think they showed that it was good in as much as, aside from the fear of what we're saying about the world, right? That's really the core of your objection, I think. Like, they executed story well here.
Yeah.
Like, they executed, like, managing this globe-trotting
story. Action movie, yes.
It's really well told.
And
it's much better than any other subsequent sequel. I think because it's the right size.
It's more tied together. Yeah. And at any given time, it's clearer in your mind why you're doing what you're doing next. Yeah.
Yes.
The missions feel very tied together.
I can't say how much more energy was spent in the writing here versus any of the others. Maybe not, but maybe they just happened to get this one right. But like, this is the only Call of Duty story game where I was like, that was a very good story. Like, that was a very good story. And I think says most Call of Duties don't have a very good story. They have a fine story at best, or sometimes bad, like a bad story. this was a very good
disjointed story. I find them usually disjointed, which this one was not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, it was navigated partly through the protagonists and through the hero's journey of it all. Mm-hmm. Like it was navigated in a way where you could follow it. You know, like there's basically two strands. There's the Captain Price and Soap strand, and then there's the American military occupying. I don't know if they were clear about what country it is, but a Middle Eastern country. And then your American
made up fake name, Middle Eastern country,
which that is a safe move. Yeah. But also maybe that actually might be worse than if they'd named a country. I don't know.
Right.
And then the American military piece of it, like they die, you know, and it's like pretty stirring. You know, through that nuclear explosion, which is very upsetting.
So that's the other thing is a lot of people talk about No Russian, and we've talked about No Russian, of course.
Right.
But realizing, replaying this, that this was the first time they played with that idea, and remembering how shocked I really was when I played it originally and got nuked, because Call of Duties tend to blend together for me in the modern era. As I said, to the degree that we confused what game we were playing. But when I loaded this up and I saw that rotating SAS logo and the world map, I went, oh, this one. Like, I realized that this one actually is indelibly, like sniping Zakaev's arm off from 1,000 yards away. Like, all the moments of this game immediately came back to me. I could tell you, you know, loading up the opening logo, I was like, I remember all the characters and plot in this whole one. That's not true of any other Call of Duty.
That's right.
I don't latch onto it as a story or absorb it to a degree that I remember, oh, this one. And as soon as I was like, oh yeah, the fucking nuke level. Oh man, I forgot that predates No Russian. Like that's the time they actually did that. And it works so, so well. And I think kind of works even better than No Russian. Honestly, like the idea that you're this, if you're going to have them be super soldiers, which they kind of are, but you have no ammo, no weapons, there's no mission. You're like, what am I supposed to do? You wander around the level and you're like, oh, I just succumbed to radiation. Oh,
oh,
fuck.
I'm going to die here. Oh, no. Yeah,
that's that.
Well, also,
and if you look at it as a screenplay, that is the act 1 to 2 break, which is a perfect time to set the stakes of this is what we're fighting for. One of the main characters gets nuked. It's not complex story writing, but it's correct story. You know what I mean? Like the people who wrote this story actually know their way around story structure, it seems to me.
Yeah. I would say the midpoint, but it is the key story beat for sure. Mm-hmm. Also our brains have been over the last, like what, 40 years or whatever, 50 years. Like every time you see a nuclear explosion, it's always this dire thing, right? You see like tests or whatever. So when you're not prepared for it, it really is like, whoa. And also like, I think it might be a good thing for,
by the way, sorry, I'm just looking at the official developer released list of Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare campaign missions. Aftermath, the level where you die of radiation burns, is literally the end of Act 1.
Is that what they said?
They break the missions into Act 1, 2, 3. Boom! Sorry, screenwriters love arguing about what the midpoint is.
What mission number is it?
Act 1 is very fat. Act 1 is like 8 missions. Act 2 is like 4, and then Act 3 is like 3.
That's so why you're it feels right like that. That's it why feels it feels like the midpoint. Midpoint. Okay.
Yes. We're both right.
Makes sense. Yeah, that was like that, but it's in the middle of the game. Okay, well, that's weird. Which tells you they have a lot of like setting up to do. Right?
They do.
Like there's a lot of setup in this game. So that's interesting. Let me ask you like these questions that they're a little bit like Aristotelian, but I think they deserve to be talked about since the point of views that we share. Do you think there's any moral goods to the idea of a military shooter? Like, is it a moral bad in your mind, or is it a moral neutral in your mind?
Huh? That's interesting. Without having the time to like meditate on it for hours, which I actually think it probably deserves, I would say my gut reaction on everything's case by case, but my gut reaction that seems to shape my like opinion or emotional reaction to something is, I think that as a basis for a game, pointing your camera around and seeing if you can click on something that's wiggling around, which is ultimately the base interaction of what FPS is a totally viable, valuable carnival game or, you know, toy interaction. Right. to build. And then how have FPSs developed? Well, you complexify that loop, add in grenades, add in the fact that you have to duck and take cover and pop up. You have to know when to reload. But at its core, it's this pointing and clicking. Can I click on this thing that's trying to not be clicked on? That can be anything. That doesn't actually have to be realistically shooting a guy who bleeds out in war context.
Often is anything.
Often is that.
Yeah.
So this carries over to other stuff too, right? Like I just watched The Woman King, which was a great movie, but it was interesting to me, and it dates back to Western, everything. It's an American issue. American culture, I think, even more than like British culture. And I'm not the first to say this, but we downplay the repercussions of gun violence, especially, but also just violence. We think it's very fun and it's okay that to depict it as fun to for superior type people who are special to run around shooting people in the head, strangling people, killing them in unique ways. And it's interesting. I do believe in my heart of hearts, and I'm always someone who's like, violent video games, fuck off. I believe that most fully formed human beings who reach even young adult age understand the difference between fantasy and reality. So no, I don't think there's anything wrong inherently on its face with a story about killing someone. I don't think that makes you more or less likely to kill someone, right?
That isn't exactly what I'm asking you though, because I agree with that. I'm asking you about the military part.
Narrow in on military. Yeah, yes. Thank you. But now when you narrow in on, okay, but it's about the American military or the allied military forces of the Western powers of the world, and it's coming out in the aughts, I do feel like we're at a level where I am sick of seeing, like, I want to see more de-escalation on the global scale instead of escalation. It breaks my heart to see whole generations of young people who can't find their niche in society or can't hook into a way to make money, settling on, I guess I'll just sign up for the military, and getting funneled into situations where they die or get traumatized or have PTSD for the rest of their lives. I think that sucks. I think humanity can and will do better someday. I don't know what the solution to war is, but I have hope that the amount of war that we need globally will diminish over the centuries. I think it's bad to make war seem fun. I do think that's like, okay. I don't like Top Gun for that reason.
Right.
I don't think it's bad in that I don't think watching Top Gun will make me want to go fire a Sidewinder missile out of a MiG or whatever. What I think is that in the aggregate, there's a whole system of jingoistic storytelling, especially in America, training impressionable young people to think that being in the military is sick and it will be like playing a fun video game. And I just feel bad for young people who are like, you know, I'm not the first to say this, but even military recruitment commercials now are like digitized effects come in and morph to be a video game soldier kicking ass. That is not war. What war is like. Mind shattering tragedy. Like, come on.
We did a crack. Well, again, that's us projecting our beliefs onto it. But we did a Cracked video about terrorist recruitment videos, and they were also based around Call
It'll
of Duty.
It'll be like a video game.
Tropes.
It's going to be dope. Don't worry.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I don't share the. I'm going to use gentle words, I think. I hope. I don't share the deep concern about it because I think I'm not really a libertarian, but I'm suspicious of the degree to which it's damaging. I'm suspicious of it.
Just because you mentioned the word libertarian, for the record, I don't think we should curb it or have laws that say you can't do that. I'm just allowed to be mildly offended. And on the scale of offensive things for me, it's not high. I'm just saying, I think it's technically immoral.
Great.
What Call of Duty does in the modern context. It's not like I'm not going to. And no, I don't think the government or laws should say you can't do that. It hasn't reached that level.
And the reason I want to have this conversation, even though it's dominating our chat here, is in part because we agree about what this game is. Like, that we actually don't disagree about what it is, but also because I kind of wanted to stand in for how we're going to talk about Call of Duty going forward, because this is not the last Call of Duty game we're going to cover, you know, assuming we get to continue doing the podcast forever. I think I agree with, like, that some things are bad for you, right? Like I think Call of Duty might be bad for us, like in the way that Grand Theft Auto might be bad for us, or like candy bars might be bad for you. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, to some degree, but not crazy bad. Like, it doesn't poison your mind or anything.
Yes, I'm skeptical about the way that people can like inflate the impact of those things. Like even something like Top Gun, as a judgment writ large on the art. You know, because like this is primarily an art podcast. Ultimately.
Yeah. Now see, you finished. Sorry.
So that's why I wanted to have this conversation so that we can agree to that part and still venerate the art without feeling like we're sacrificing some moral stance here.
Yeah. Like looking at the clock, I think we should move on. I want to say a bunch of stuff I think is amazing about the technical achievements of Call of Duty. But on that note that you just said, which I do think is fascinating, I think that's such an interesting thing because as someone who wants to be and spends a lot of time in my spare time being a storyteller, like I feel like that's my tribe. I revere the art of storytelling. I feel like I'm part of a sacred order that dates all the way back to cavemen, you know, gathered around the fire, trying to find a way to make an inexplicable universe makes full of stars and shit make sense. Right. Stories are so, on the one hand, art and stories seem to me to literally create our reality because they encode like what we think is normal, important, good, bad.
They interpret.
We get that from stories. And yet at the same time, it's also a totally viable viewpoint that stories are nothing. No one story can, like playing Call of Duty in a void cannot make me go join the military.
Right.
Right. And so that's, their aggregate, stories are everything, but no individual story bears all the responsibility for your actions, of course.
Yes. And I think it's important to resist it's also important to resist the quantification of it more than anything else. Like, I'm okay adding all the ingredients
to
the discussion.
How bad is Call of Duty?
Right. Well, and people often do. You know what I mean? Like when people judge it, they often like, oh, it's just propaganda. No, no. Propaganda might be part of what it is, but it's not just that. It's also like a really well-told military story, you know, and people want a military story. It's also meeting a huge demand, you know, so like.
And I don't know that I'd want every movie to be every time anyone gets shot, we go, oh, now it has to be a really painful dying of sepsis scene. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, and I get it.
Yeah. Okay, great. So we all agree on that. Now I'm going to move forward.
So
I know you're not a multiplayer guy, right? So I just wanted to like jump in with this piece because I feel like most people that love Call of Duty now love it for the multiplayer. They don't love it for the campaign.
In the new era,
This game started,
but now it's even way more pronounced. Multiplayer is it now. Like, absolutely. That is the product. Yeah.
They released the campaign as early access in the most recent Call of Duty, which is
to
say,
almost as a thing to like get used to the new physics and then go do the real game, which is fighting other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be, and I love telling this little factoid because it just is telling about the world we live in. You know this. My house was robbed in 2015.
You've told this story on the show, I think.
It bears mentioning. The only games that were, they stole all my game consoles and they stole some valuable jewelry and stuff. The only games they stole were Call of Duty, which is to say it translates, friends. Call of Duty translates to all walks of life.
I've had a grandparent refer to video games generally as, are you playing one of your Call of Duty?
Are you playing one of your Calls of Duty? Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Meaning any video game. They meant, are you playing video games? Yeah, that's
how it's usurped everything. Yeah. And I really think it's because they figured out the formula here. They figured out the way that we want to compete. And like, it's sick. Like, it's a sick thing, but there's a kind of capitalism to the way that it's structured. Which is, if you succeed, you get additional resources to further destroy other people, which is how we all want to be in competition, right? We want to succeed and then have so much
extra
power.
You want to get streaks going, yeah.
Right, and kill streaks are that, you know what I mean? And like that really appeals to, at least certainly the Western sensibility, I want to say, of like, you know,
maybe that's
dominating
why I don't
other
like
people.
Because no, I really don't want. I don't want to for the rich to get richer and the poor to get poor. I really want everyone to be equal. That is really what I want. And multiplayer is not about
it's
that.
The exact
it
opposite
the wrong way
in every way. I will say, as a person who's played every multiplayer of every Call of Duty since this game, the simplicity of it, like it was really distilled here. Like it was, it is charming, and I kind of miss it. And I think the innovation here completely changed video games, as small as that is. It's a huge change. And it's still the reason why I can call up my friends when a new Call of Duty comes out, and we're going to get a fun couple of weekends on it. Like Tom and Dave and I, we're going to play Call of Duty after this. Like he's been sending me texts, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I think it all boils down to that sweet loop that they figured out, and they basically don't fuck with it. They've added other characters.
No one
to chase.
Thought to text me or include me in that.
Did you want
to
play it?
Good to know.
Bro, you
I
are
just said
so
I
welcome.
Just bought Modern Warfare 2 and I've been playing it.
You're in, bro. Just like that. Look how quickly look how inclusive this game is.
Also, this was just a bit, but I'd be down.
Great. Wonderful.
But I also want to mention, so strip away, you know, I've said my piece, like whatever part of it is propaganda. But
and some part is.
Boom. Things I love that I realized this time through are actually unique to COD.
Okay.
Because subtly, a lot of FPSs, I'm like, I sometimes fall into the trap of thinking FPSs are all the same. You throw grenades, you look around. But that there are subtle differences that are subtle, but very important. Like the golden triangle in Halo, right? Or what a revelation that was. But anyway, for Call of Duty specifically, there's no real looting element. Or overly worrying about ammo. On occasion, if you get pinned down, you'll run out of ammo, but usually you have enough ammo. And there's also no real weapon collecting or hoarding, which is so common in every other FPS. I have a wheel of 20 weapons.
Right.
This really realistically, I imagine this is how real soldiers are. You're outfitted with the tools that are appropriate to the type of job it's going to be, and you can pick up the weapons that are discarded by people you kill, but you usually have a gun that's serviceable to start with because you're a soldier who's prepared. I think that's very interesting in how different it is from most FPSs, which are like, we invented 12 cool guns. You want all 12 because they're so cool. It pushes you to take cover frequently and go slowly. It encourages you
to
stop down, take a bite out of the level, move quickly to the next spot. And from my layman's understanding and games like Full Spectrum Warrior or what have you, that tends to be how real war is. You take a spot, you wait until there seems to be enough safety to move. You move forward one spot, you go again. And the ones who make it to the end become heroes and live. I also love that it's silent. It's very Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
There is music during the cutscenes, and the music scrupulously cuts out when you're in the shit. When you're in the shit, it's all sound design, no music.
It's
very few FPSs rely on that, like have no score if you think about it.
It's,
they mostly have score.
It doesn't want to be the bombastic action movie that the rest of the franchise became. Like it definitely wanted to be contained and somewhat realistic. I find particularly disturbing because of that, the AC-130 mission in this game. The AC-130,
is that the epilogue, the bonus mission?
No, that's the one that's you're in the plane and you're bombing people
okay. So what I wanted to say,
about
the death from above is that
death from above.
I do think that's very emblematic of taking a shift in a direction that I find disturbing. I think disturbing is the right word because they've included this type of mission ever since. And to be clear, this is a mission where I was pleased that in this one, it actually does have loss conditions. There's your guys on the field. If you shoot them, you lose the mission. If you shoot the church, you lose the mission.
Right.
Which is great. It underscores that our soldiers are actually scrupulous. Like, we are at war with these people, but you're not allowed to just level their church.
There's rules of engagement.
I like that message.
Yeah.
You will find as the franchise wears on, they've kept this mission. And they've lost the loss conditions.
Sometimes, not always.
So, but usually nowadays, it's just a power fantasy. Look how much better American tech is than other tech. Look how much we can just fucking shit on these people.
It really is that.
And I don't like reveling in that.
Yeah.
That's weird to me.
It really is that. In fact, like, and it starts here, and it's really interesting how detached the people manning the plane are.
Oh, like, the vocals are like, got him, another one down.
Yeah,
good job.
Good kill. Yeah. You know, like, you missed him. Like, and I think the conversational, like the tone of it is right in this game because you're supposed to feel like, oh my God. Like it was the first time you did it, and it was very like, this is terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, like how detached it is, but it was so cool that other games have leaned into like, that's right, bomb them down, bird boy. You
and
know, like,
that security camera look is so cool.
It's awesome. It's awesome because it's like, my God, this exists, but it's terrifying. Mm. And I think this game understood that. And the subsequent ones are a little bit more like, you like that shit? You load up, baby. You know, the most recent Call of Duty, by the way, pushed a little further back toward this game. With like lots of rules, and they made you wait for different stuff. And I think that was a good move. Anyway, I wanted to mention that because that was to me emblematic of something that's true about this, particular installment of Call of Duty. And that is, they are showing you how detached a professional soldier is. They are trying to show you that like Price is detached. That's a thing.
And that is extremely different than the World War II experience in a way that is true, I reckon. Yes, like,
I agree.
Yeah, as a member of SEAL Team 6, unlike World War II, where you're going across these vast fields of everyone around you is charging and who knows who, right? Lord of the Rings style, who's going to get killed, who's going to live. Modern Warfare and a lot of the current installments are much more like, we're breaching this room, we're going through the floor, we're clearing the floor, we're going upstairs. Yeah.
And it's very,
it's like working with a team of professionals.
It feels like that
rounds.
It feels very surgical and very, again, dehumanizing. And I think the problem is that it was so awesome that the dehumanizing became cool,
became catchy.
And
cool
I don't think it was supposed to be cool.
Yeah.
I think this game understood that. And then Call of Duty.
No. And really, now the current one, the character on the cover is Ghost, who I have to say is the most detached sociopathic character in the franchise.
Absolutely.
And he's been elevated to the face of the franchise. It's like, isn't it cool how he will just shoot someone in the head and not care?
He's
and
like
that's not cool to me.
He's like an old school warlord. Like he's a complete fucking maniac. And like, they don't seem to know that.
I get why tweens think it's, I used to think shit like that was cool. I just grew out.
He looks like Sauron. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, he's a cold motherfucker, dude. Yeah.
He's a maniac. And I'm not here to like judge.
Oh,
them.
And that type of character is interesting to me to exist.
Yes.
I just think the story should dig into what it, that
why
means.
Is he a maniac?
And this doesn't.
Yes.
All this story says is it's cool that he's a maniac.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right.
I want to cover the most recent one sometime soon if we can, because I thought they really, really missed the mark on like who these monsters they're making are. Like I thought we were playing monsters this time, and I don't know that the franchise knew that.
And we didn't investigate that fact.
Not really.
But I also got to drag this in.
Yeah.
I do think this is a valid aspect of the series having gone downhill. Call of Duty 4, I click it and it opens and it says, do you want to play the campaign or multiplayer? And I click on what I want and it opens and it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In contrast, I played these games switching back and forth between this one and the one that just dropped. So in contrast, I tried to play I completed the third mission. And then I was like, now it's time to go to the reboot, the new brand new one, and play that third mission. So I tried to, and I was excited because I was having so much fun in Modern Warfare. And I was like, this is going to be interesting to compare. I couldn't log on for a few cycles. Then it told me I couldn't play without updating. And I updated. It took 11 minutes. Then it said I couldn't play the campaign having the multiplayer pack installed, even though I don't play multiplayer. It said it doesn't matter. You have to install multiplayer. So I had to install the multiplayer pack, which was so large, I had to go delete other games. Then when that finally installed, I clicked go on campaign and it said waiting for server for 4 minutes. Then it loaded the level. And the level was boring and bad. And I was just like, man, but what I'm really getting at is it's also become technologically bloated
and
to a degree
that's right.
That is talked about in the industry and that I think actually bears mentioning. Call of Duty like sucks to use now. It's this huge mess of
bloated bullshit. Yeah.
And it can take you 20 minutes to get the machine to a point where you're in and playing the game. Because you have to do a bunch of bullshit, sign forms, download packs. It updates every day, a couple times a day for a long time.
Right. Modern Warfare,
I just think it bears mentioning.
This game is distilled and lean and like a good diehard. Mm-hmm. You come to respect that when everything that comes after it doesn't understand the strength of not trying to do everything. Right. You know, like from a story point of view, they don't try to do everything. You know, from the multiplayer, they don't try to do everything. Like it's like measured, thoughtful, careful stuff. You know, and of course, that's the problem with success, right? Is that the sequel to this, Modern Warfare 2 from 2009, is a story of Russia invading America. Was it fun and interesting? Yeah. That's a, it's an interesting Call of Duty. It's a fun campaign because it's really bombastic.
That level's fun when you actually see the Russians parachuting in. You're There's like, so ah, many cool Red things. Dawn. I'm in Red Dawn.
Right. And that's when you're like, oh, this is going to be like a true action movie. Whereas, again, this game was more committed to the premise of Call of Duty. And I think we've lost that. Like we've lost the these military engagements count and these threats exist in the world. And this is what war is really like. I do think this game was trying to tell that story. You know, whether it achieved that, it's hard for me to say. I'm not in the military and I don't know, but it feels
definitely
true.
More so than what came after. Yeah. It's trying.
Yeah. And it did it, you know, and it's still fun to play. By the way, that's another thing. It's a 15-year-old game. It's still extremely fun to play. Like it looks good still. It's still very fun to play. It's snappy. It loads
the
up really quick.
The dispersal of clouds of enemies is super well planned.
Yeah.
Enemies, which is a small thing, but so crucial in an FPS. Like when enemies are hiding behind doors and shit is well planned out. Whoever invented the fully contextual, I find it so impressive. The fully contextual chatter that your men will be like, guy on the left on the roof.
Yes,
and it's
love
true.
That. Yes.
They're accurate about shouting shit out to you. So cool.
Yes. Right. And it's a really, you really do feel like you're with a band of soldiers. Like, and that no longer was true in the same way after this for basically all the games, not including the Black Ops series, which had its own vibe. It started to be like, now you're in war, but it's real war, which is, I guess, what Call of Duty was trying to do in the first place. But I feel like the idea of Modern Warfare being these bands of people sort of combating various terrorist threats was an appealing way of distilling warfare.
A common thing wisdom soldiers bring back is you're not actually fighting so that your country will win or X leader will be deposed. In the moment, you're fighting so that your buddy next to you will live. Like you fight for your other soldiers. That's what you're fighting for, you know?
Right.
Which makes total sense.
Right. I guess I feel that it's time perhaps to ship out into our final mission after we take this quick debrief and
I'll take my pants off.
Thank you.
There go the briefs.
He really did that. Okay. Here's some commercials.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with our final segment, one-upsmanship, Michael Adam, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. I do think it's telling, on the other side of the break, what we were talking about, I think it's telling that in this game, sort of like Star Trek Red Shirts, the band of brothers you are with,
yes,
the ones who you play as, like your Price and your Soap McTavishes, you either can't shoot them, like when you point at them, your gun will muzzle itself, Or, because sometimes you can sweep the gun fast enough that it does hit them and there is friendly fire, but then the level will end and say, you can't kill Price.
Will not be tolerated.
But I love that there are some privates. You can totally kill the privates and the mission just keeps rolling along, which I think is telling because, right? That's the physical gamification of some of these people have plot armor and some people don't.
Right.
And I think that that's where you start to lose your way as far as telling a truthful war story. Because guess what? Nobody has plot armor in war.
Well, it's the contrast of, well, that's the problem is if you're going to tell a cinematic story, but also do a war story, you have to find a compromise. And, you know, it rubs the wrong way when you're the one doing the shooting. You know,
that is the rub. And it brings us to our final segment.
Indeed.
We pass a checkpoint into keep or delete, where we give our final thoughts and sort of explain why we landed where we landed, on whether Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare makes it onto the celestial hard drive. We will one day show aliens as an overview of the gaming medium.
Yeah.
You went first last time. Should I go first?
Yes. Although I feel like your vote is more in doubt than mine, probably. But go ahead.
So is it more suspenseful if we...
Let me go first. I think it is more suspenseful if you go second. Okay,
sure.
So I feel pretty strongly we should keep this game. I think, number one, it is a great game. It's better than a lot of other shooters. It's a better shooter than a lot of the games we've kept that are shooters. I think that if you're going to tell the story of video game history at all, this game is fucking so central to it. Like the last 20 years really go right through Call of Duty Modern Warfare. I also just think it's still really fun to play and a technical achievement and has set up the culture of multiplayer for better, for worse, and the culture of military shooters for better, for worse. We may think that's all bad, but video games clearly don't, and people buying video games clearly don't. To me, if there's any Call of Duty that's got to be saved, it's got to be this one. So I'm keeping it on the hard drive. What say you, Mike?
I will mention the following things.
Okay.
This game, which I think is incredible. Over the credits of this game, there's a fucking rap about the plot of the game, which is so rare these days and so appreciated anytime anyone does it. Smith walking in the footsteps of Will Smith. This rap includes lines like SAS, hands up. Yo, ZKF, hands up. He's the one-handed widow maker. The man's up. When I hear the Call of Duty is one of the lines. Oh, my favorite line is, this is the fourth installment. Infinity bullshit. Don't forget to stay frosty because it's deep and it's hard, bitch.
So good. I can't believe that.
It's deep and it's hard.
It never triggered me that happened. And I'm living
ready. I was not ready for that when the credits rolled. But there's a hardcore rap about Call of Duty.
Wow.
And then I also want to mention another... The game kind of gets silly right at the end,
which
is funny.
Just a little bit,
There's a bonus mission that starts with, because the last line of the rap is deep and hard, bitch. And then the bonus mission starts with Price saying, all right, we're going deep and we're going hard. And then someone saying, surely you're not serious. And he says, I am, and don't call me Shirley, which is a famous line from Airplane, at which point the camera pans in and you realize you're in an airplane. So I just thought it was funny how at the end they're like, and a couple jokes.
And here's this bit that we liked.
I'm going to delete it.
Really? You're deleting it? No way.
There is a Call of Duty that I absolutely would put on the drive. I'm waiting for us to cover it, and then I'll make my argument then.
Can you mention?
And maybe you'll delete that one, and then Call of Duty will never be on the drive.
You're deleting this game? I can't believe that. So if there is a Call of Duty, then I don't need to be outraged by it. Do you mind saying what it is?
There's a Call of Duty I would let by, no questions asked, and... If you bring this one up on an episode where we're reconsidering things, it's a strong candidate for reconsideration.
Okay. All right.
But I guess my base argument is that I know a Call of Duty that absolutely could just skate by, and I don't see why I should let two on.
We shouldn't let two
but
on.
But maybe I'm being an asshole and I should just let both on.
No. I agree with you. Call of Duty has not proven as storytelling, as art form, that it deserves to have two. I don't think.
Okay.
I'm interested in talking about Black Ops, if that's a game that you're interested in. And I'm interested in the reboots of this franchise and the sequel to this. Are any of those the one you're talking about? Do you want to just tell me what it is, or do you not want to tell me?
I feel like it should be obvious given the what I dislike about the franchise. But for me, Call of Duty 2 is the winner all the way. And you probably can't resonate with ones that are that
old. No, I played 2. I've played it.
Okay.
So you want a military shooter on here. Or sorry, you want a history shooter on here.
I feel I've been clear about.
Yeah, you have.
I think it's more tasteful and palatable to me to examine war through the history lens than through the action adventure lens. And the reason it's 2 and not 1 or 3 is I really think 2 for me, it nailed. That's the one Call of Duty multiplayer that I got heavily into. So there's the nostalgia factor. And I really think the main plot's strong. It advanced so much about Call of Duty 1 in terms of level design, blah, 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 and introduced a lot of the seminal elements that I think Modern Warfare is benefiting from. And that said, Modern Warfare also features a bunch of innovations. But as I said, they're innovations that I think ruined a franchise I used to love. So
yeah, you did Call of Duty. That's interesting.
1, 2, and 3 are like perfect games to me.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about Call of Duty 2 sometime. Can we also talk about Battlefield 1 sometime?
I've never touched it. I'd love to.
I think that we should talk about that. That was a big hit. And it fits your criteria more than any other contemporary shooter does.
Okay.
So that's something to, like, it's literally just like slices of World War One. That's all it is. Just like, here's this engagement. World War One.
Oh,
yes, World War One.
Because that's the other thing is I don't understand why Call of Duty doesn't go back to World War One.
Battlefield
so cool.
One did go to World War One.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's a really good game. So maybe that one's worth talking about.
I want
about.
A Civil War. I want the stress of having to reload my musket and shit. I thought about that.
The problem is that you spend a minute between shots if you're going to get it right. You know what I mean? Which sucks.
Yeah, it just sucks.
Sure. So I'll just say this on this game. I strongly disagree with us not having this game on the drive. I on a fundamental, like, representing what video games are, like, in that way. This game is very important for that. So when and if I make an argument for reinvestigating it, that's the main thrust of it that I would make.
It's not a GTA 5, or like, I'm not brazenly saying,
like, fuck you, I'm not doing it.
Alive,
right.
This will never make the drive. It could.
Right,
it could.
All right. Well, this is why there's two of us and we both didn't turn the key. And therefore, I guess the nuke didn't launch. So maybe we have cause to celebrate today. Don't worry, all you COD boys, I got you covered. We will try another engagement someday down the line on One Upsmanship.
Whee!
Work complete.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.